So we move on from the Radio Sai Bhajan classroom straight to outside, inside, deep inside. So thank you so much for continuing to listen to us from Prashant Nilayam, from the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And it indeed is a time of vigorous activity, heavenly sublimity and spiritual beauty in Prashant Nilayam. As the Dasara celebrations is on, as the Veda Purusha Sapta Jnana Yajnam is on, as the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha is on, as the annual massive moving Gram Seva is on. Every Dasara in Prashanti is something exceptional. And this is one of those festivals which Bhagwan instituted way back in the 40s. Perhaps one of those very first festivals to be celebrated in the divine physical presence. And it was always, always an elaborate affair spanning 9 to 10 days and involving everyone in Prashant Nilayam, drawing multitudes to the divine hamlet. In fact, in the 40s and 50s, there was no yajnam like we have now, which started only in the 60s, but then there were many other pujas that they performed then, and the greatest spectacle of those days was the palanquin procession that happened every night in these 9 days. Devotees from Venkatgiri, from Bangalore, from Chennai would come in large numbers and decorate the mandir. Not only that, they would bring along with them beautifully and innovatively designed palanquins which look like a peacock, a swan, a Garuda, Adishesha, lotus and so on. And the most charming thing is Bhagwan would wear robes of different colors every day and a color that matches with the decorated palanquin. And he would even ask cutely, "Is it matching?" when he would come out and sit on the palanquin. While all this was so captivating, what was mesmerizing was the miracles that happened as he was taken along the streets of Prashanti with bhajans and vedam going on. And this would go on till midnight. Yes, devotees till this day recall how Vibhuti used to copiously materialize on Bhagwan's forehead in three horizontal straight lines. How sometimes he would just take a petal from the palanquin and throw it at a devotee and that would have turned into a medal, into a gold coin. How some have been immensely blessed with the vision of seeing the Lord as Shiva Shakti. When they looked at Bhagwan from the left half of his face, they could see him as Mother Goddess herself. They saw a red jerry brocade sari and orange and green matching blouse, all the flowers on the hair and the heavy jewelry adorning her very distinctly. And when they saw him from the right side, they could see him as Shiva with the Ganges, the crescent moon on his matted locks, the snake as an ornament. They saw the vibhuti marks on his shoulder. They saw the deer skin. And those were those glorious and precious days of yesteryears. And when 60s arrived, Dasara took on a different hue. In fact, during the first of the 10-day festival in 1962, on 29th September to be precise, Bhagwan, while hoisting the Prashanti flag on the Prashanti Mandir, he declared, "At Prashanti, every day is a festival day. Every moment is a holy moment." And he quoted in Telugu, "Nitya Kalyanam Pacha Toranam." Every day is a festival. Every moment is sacred. And after saying this, Bhagwan in a very clear, unmistakable way delineated one of his principal tasks. And he said, "My task is threefold. Veda Samrakshana, Vidvat Poshana, Dharma Sansthapana." That is, first the preservation of the Vedas. Veda Samrakshana, Vidvat Poshana, fostering of Vedic scholarship. And then Dharma Sansthapana, establishment of Dharma or righteousness. And Swami explained all these three are interdependent. Because when we want to do Dharma Sansthapana, when we want to establish righteousness, we have to preserve the Vedas, because the Vedas are the basis for Dharma. And the scholars are the instruments for the propagation of these sacred texts and tenets. And only when they do this will righteousness establish in this world, which is the only panacea for all the ills of mankind today. And the way the Veda Purusha Sapta Jnana Yajnam, this Vedic sacrifice, started in Prashant Nilayam is something interesting. In the early 60s, when Bhagwan was traveling extensively the length and breadth of India, from Badrinath in 1961 to small towns and villages in Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh and so on, there was this news of Swami visiting the East Godavari district. And this deltaic region of the Godavari basin is in fact the home of classical learning in Andhra Pradesh. That is the area which had many distinguished and eminent Vedic scholars. So they thought to include a Vedic sacrifice as one of the functions that Swami could attend when he was in the East Godavari district. And so, when they communicated this to Bhagwan, Swami said, "You want to do the sacrifice? Why didn't you do it in Prashanti itself during Dasara so that thousands all over India could have the thrill of witnessing this?" And then, the list of qualified ritualists and the reciters, the pundits and shastris who do the sacrifice were sent to Swami. And when Swami saw that, he noticed that all the scholars selected were from the Konaseema region. Konaseema region refers to the delta area in the East Godavari district. Bhagwan sent them back that list and he said, "My Seema, my reach, my area is not Konaseema. My Seema is Veda Seema. My reach, my area is not restricted only to the deltaic region. My reach is Veda Seema. That is all the areas where Vedas are revered." And so, after this, the organizers totally rehashed and revised the list. Now, they included Vedic pundits and scholars from all parts of India, from Banaras, Bangalore, Hyderabad. And once this was approved by Bhagwan, they started for Prashanti Nilayam. And it was Swami who called it Veda Purusha Saptaha Gyana Yajnam. And he told them that scrupulous care should be taken to observe every Vedic injunction to the minutest detail. And so every aspect of this sacrifice, the number, the size and situation of the pillars of the Yajna Mandapam, the number and shape of the sacrificial pits, it was Atirudra Homam for 7 days, the location of the shrines of subsidiary deities, the placement of the Navagrahas, the Kshetrapalakas, everything was very correctly fixed. Even the grass, the Kusa grass seats for the participants were prepared in accordance with the do's and don'ts that the Shastras prescribe. The materials for the sacrifice, like ghee prepared from cow's milk, earth from ant hills and from royal equestrian stables and royal elephant stables, the banyan tree twigs, the spoons made of special wood, everything was done under direct personal supervision of Bhagwan. One estimate is altogether 2,26,270 spoonfuls of ghee were offered during the 7 mornings into the sacrificial fire with the concurrent invocation of appropriate names of the Lord. And this sacrifice, Bhagwan said, was meant to certainly promote welfare and peace of the world. Now there are two things here. One is the result of the sacrifice and the things that were offered into the sacrificial fire. Baba said how at times misguided people criticize the pouring of ghee into the fire as a waste. And Swami said that for these people, what matters is jars of ghee and bundles of wood rather than the most precious and lasting joy of having invoked and pleased the gods and received their blessings. In fact, Bhagwan went to the extent of saying, "All these people who question thus have consumed hundreds of bags of rice and pots of ghee since their birth. I ask them if they have had a single day of pure happiness, or at least have been able to give a single day of joy to their kith and kin. But look at this sacrifice. It grants peace and confers joy on so many." And Swami sealed it by saying, "I and my people are delighted. What else do you need? Is that not enough compensation?" And then he also then explained how pouring ghee into the fire is like a farmer sowing seeds on the field. With time it will only give us a rich harvest of prosperity, of security and peace. This is also a sign, Swami said. It's just that we have not understood it. And Bhagwan made Brahmashri Cherkumali Kameshwara Rao Ganapati, who is honored as a Veda Samrat, he made him the Sarvadhyaksha, or the overall supervisor of the sacrifice. And this revered Pandit later recited verses from the Vedas to show how everything that Swami did was strictly according to Vedic injunctions. There was no act of Baba which was casual. Even simple things like referring to the Ritviks as gods, distributing white silk clothes to the reciters of the Vedas and red silk to those engaged in other rites, even the order in which Swami presented the awards to the participants at the end of the Yajna, everything was according to what was mentioned in the Shastras. And the amazing thing is, when it was told to Bhagwan that images of Navagrahas are needed for installation, he just created them with a wave of his hand. Where again a plate of gold was needed to be deposited with the relevant mantras in the water vessel, he just made it from thin air. Similarly, when it was time for the valedictory offering for the Purnahuti approached, Swami just placed his hand over the plate and from his hand fell onto the plate the 9 gems, the Navaratnas. There are so many such instances where Bhagwan so clearly demonstrated that he is indeed the one who is the organizer, the facilitator, the participant, the performer, supervisor of this yagyam, and at the same time the one who receives all the offerings in the yagyam purusha. That was no ordinary yagyam that Baba presided over. It was indeed a revival, a revelation, a revolution, a resurgence. It was a symbol of cultural renaissance, for Swami explained that the Vedas are essential for mankind because in it there is the sign and the secret of life. And Bhagwan then said, I want to prove to you and to others that a yajna celebrated according to Vedic formulae will certainly grant the fruits promised by the Vedas. He wanted all of us to know that if you do these rituals according to their injunctions, you will certainly get the fruits that it promises. In fact, this was the time when Swami also set up the Veda Pathshala in Prashantinilam. And on that occasion, Swami said, my prema towards the Vedas is matched only by my prema towards humanity. This was also the occasion when Swami announced the establishment of the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabhas. Now, those days, it was an all-India academy of scholars, and Swami had constituted this group with the task to awaken humanity to the need to attain prashanti, to attain inner harmony, and which can be got through the practices and principles of the Sanatana Dharma enshrined in the ancient scriptures of India. Swami even declared at Venkatagiri, the establishment of the Vidwan Mahasabha is an epoch-making event, for it is not less than the dawn of the golden era of the liberation of humanity. And Swami had this band of scholars conduct this Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabhas in different cities and towns for many years, and he himself presided over many of them. This was inaugurated in Dasara 1965, and Swami said to all the scholars, in an earlier time, Goddess Bhavani gave a sword into the hand of Emperor Shivaji and he commissioned him to go forth and protect Sanatana Dharma. Today, this Shiva Shakti, I am giving you the sword of courage and calling out to you to march forward and revive Dharma in the world. In all lands, the true sense of values has to be restored and the faith in the divinity of man has to be implanted. This is the work for which I have come. In all lands, the true sense of values has to be restored and the faith in the divinity of man has to be implanted. This is the work for which I have come. And today, don't we see this? Prashanti has indeed become the epicenter of a spiritual revolution that is sweeping across all lands, crossing all borders and barriers. And Dasara today in Prashanti is a festival that draws people not just from India but from all countries and continents. And talking about this, what is remarkable is the band of Sai youth from United Kingdom under the dynamic leadership of Mr. Ajit Popat, who come every year for more than a decade now to participate in this Dasara celebration wholly and completely, just like every student of Baba's university is an integral part of this celebration. In fact, all these youth from United Kingdom, they do everything that a Sai student does during Dasara. And in fact, much more, really, because they not only go to the villages, they not only participate in the yagyam, they not only listen to the Prashanti Vidvan Mahasabha every evening, they not only serve along with the boys, but apart from all this, they have their own sadhana routine, which is in fact perhaps more packed than a normal student has in the Satya Sai hostel. And they have all been preparing for this chance, for this privilege, for months in United Kingdom. So for them, it is a sadhana that is very precious, very invaluable. But what exactly has this done to them? And how do they cope with it? What excites them about this? What are the challenges? And now, today being the penultimate day of the Dasara, of the Grama Seva, what is it that they treasure? What is it that they would like to take back with them back to United Kingdom? What is it that remains in their mind as cherished memories, as life lessons? Well, so this is something that we will try to gather tonight in this last segment of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as I just mentioned, we are going to listen now to Sai youth from United Kingdom who are here under the leadership of Mr. Ajit Popat. Ajit Popat, the live wire of Sai Mission. We had a session with him 2 episodes before in Outside Inside, Deep Inside. You may want to listen to that. But today we have people who have been inspired by him, who have been trained by him, and I've called this session SAI, Service, Adoration, Illumination, Sai. Because to me, that is what is the Dasara celebration. There is service, there is adoration, and there is in fact illumination. So there are 21 of them in this trip to participate in the Dasara celebrations, and by Bhagwan's grace, I have with me now 3 of them, 3 young and bright sparks of the Sai Kingdom. Rajendranath Shyam, who is an MBA from Leicester University and currently a senior corporate manager in Barclays Bank. Mauritius, we have Rohan Lakhani, who is a doctor. He works in the university hospitals of Coventry and Warwickshire. We have Jay Mistry, who has a degree in business economics from the University of East London, and he too works with Barclays as a business analyst. So we have 3 of them with us to share their views and to share their reflections on what they have been experiencing in the last 10 days in Prashant Vilayam. So welcome, brothers, to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
Salam, brother.
So where do we begin? Maybe, Jay, can you please share with us, how is your schedule like? Maybe we'll start from there, because I know that all of you go through a very rigorous spiritual routine here, and I think it would be nice for devotees to know about what goes to make your sadhana, what goes to make this trip of yours so special. Because once we know what you go through, then we'll talk about how you feel about what you go through.
Sure. I think throughout the trip, Puppet Sir instills a lot of discipline within us. So our day starts at 10 to 5 in the morning.
10 to 5, okay.
For where we all assemble, all of us, for Suprabhatam in the morning, which Puppet Sir recites. Following Suprabhatam, we then recite prayers for the day. So, for example, tomorrow is Friday. Friday is known as Juma for Muslims around the world. So tomorrow, Puppet Sir will recite, the prayers which our Muslim brothers recite on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
So we recite those, and then following those, Puppet Sir then takes us through some of his thoughts and recollections and some of his experiences with Swami. And that coincides with the thought of the day. And one thing that I've picked up since I've come here is the thought of the day and Papatsa's experiences have just so happened to be that it's exactly the same. So Papatsa spends about half an hour, 45 minutes talking to us all, sharing his experiences, and there's always a story and there's always a lesson for us to take from it, whether it be love, surrender, compassion. And it just so happens when Papatsa then goes to read the thought of the day for that specific day, it just sums up everything that Papatsa has been talking about for that past half an hour, 45 minutes. So it just shows Swami's presence is here, definitely. So following the thought of the day, by then it's time to get ready for darshan. So 8 o'clock we then make our way through to Sai Kovanthol, and together with the students we chant Vedam prior to the start of Gram Seva. Once we finish the Vedam, we make our way to our vehicles in preparation to leave Prashanti and with Swami students to go to our respective areas to conduct the day's Gram Seva. And once Gram Seva is over, we then come back as a group and have Swami's prasadam. And we're very fortunate that we also have the same annam and the laddus that we distribute to everyone as part of the Gram Seva. And as a group, we all sit together, have Swami's prasadam, and reflect on what we've experienced in the day, at Gram Seva. And then in the afternoon, luckily this year, Papatsa has been kind enough to go through the Lingashtakam. So for the past 8 days since Gram Seva started, each day Papatsa goes through one verse of the Lingashtakam, and he explained the significance of it for us all, which has been truly enlightening for me personally. Because previously I've always known of the Lingashtakam, heard of it, but never really understood the actual meaning and the essence behind it. So for the past 8 days, we've been going through verse by verse each day of the Lingashtakam. That then takes us through to evening darshan. So following, once our afternoon session is finished, we go for evening darshan at Sai Kovanthol and take part in the Vedam chanting there and listen to the program. So for the past couple of days, we've had various speakers that have come there, so listen to those as well. And then in the evening, Papatsa is also kind enough to arrange for speakers, which we go and visit. So, for example, last week we met with GV Sir here at Radio Sai. Papatsa is very kind enough to arrange for all these speakers for us to speak with us and share Swami's experience. And ultimately, this is all to put us in the right frame of mind for Gram Seva. So when we do go for Gram Seva, we're spreading Swami's love and sharing Swami's love to those that may not be able to come so consistently to Prashanti. So that's just a small example of what we do.
Yeah, wonderful. Yes, your day is packed. After going to the villages in the morning, it is definitely a bit tiring when you go all to the villages and do the service. Is it not taxing to again sit down in the afternoon and discuss about Lingashtakam? I think everyone would probably want to take a nap. What do you think, Rohan?
I think, first of all, I think we're fortunate that we're sent out with Swami students who are probably a bit more used to the conditions than we are. So I think we have that assistance with us that makes our lives much easier.
Okay.
And
but tell me, Frank, did you ever feel like, come on, man, I should have slept. Why are they telling us Lingas to come in the afternoon?
As Brother Jay has explained, we come back, we have Swami's prasadam. Papa Sarah is kind enough to give us a few minutes to take some rest and refresh ourselves, and then you know, it's the same for him as well. So if he can do it, then what excuse can we have?
Wow. If he can do it, then why not
I? He's the one speaking. We're just sitting there listening. You know, his energy and all the experiences that he's had with Swami, you know, how can you not be uplifted by those? You know, for so many years, Swami showered so much grace on him, and we're kind of so privileged to be able to experience that through him as well. So, you know, I think there's enough there to sustain us. Swami provides it.
Wow. I think, as you mentioned, I think when you look at what your spirit gets, what your mind gets, then you don't bother about the body. It's uplifting. I think once that feeling comes, then
yes.
You don't think that, you know, I should listen to the little demands of the body.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how has it been for you, Rajendranath Shyam? Tell me.
Yes, Brother Puchusha, allow me, first of all, to express our deepest gratitude to our Bhagwan, who has given us this opportunity to come here and in this Dasara celebrations, especially Grama Seva. You know, the boys who has come for the first time have been praying intensely to come and take part in the Grama Seva. And through his precious gem, I mean, Papetsa, this has been possible. And Bhagwan has showered his blessings on us and made this a reality. For me, brother, the Grama Seva has been the great learning experience
mm-hmm.
for me. And it has enabled me, you know, to appreciate real joy associated with serving the needy and the poor people. This Grama Seva, as I mentioned, you know, there are a few boys which has come here, few boys who has come for the first time. They should have really felt this joy, this deep happiness inside while serving the needy. This Grama Seva has also, you know, what I mean is, while I was touched, very touched, by the living conditions of the poor people there. But I cannot forget the joy, the feeling of contentment, the feeling of happiness in the faces of the lesser privileged people there. Allow me to narrate to you two incidents that happened during the Grama Seva. This morning itself, we were distributing clothes and prasad to one person. And this person said to me, while we were giving the sari, the clothes, the person said, don't give it to me, please give it to my mother first, then you give it to me.
Wow.
This shows how the wholehearted the good-natured people are there in the village. Another incident, you know, there one old lady touched my feet after we distributed the saris. He told me, this is not mere food, but prasad that has been sent by our dear Lord. And everything is unique in Prashanti. Every second, every minute, every day is unique in Prashanti. And Dasara is unique in the world itself, how it is celebrated in Prashanti. And for these people living in the villages, in the surroundings, they are waiting for the prasad and the closures to be distributed to them. So the old lady was telling me, he has been waiting since the morning for this prasad. Besides this, the atmosphere, the feeling of the feeling of brotherhood among the teachers and the students also has been, you know, very touching for me. It has been a real example of teamwork, of synergy, and also of unity. This has been...
It's a massive exercise. Yes, yes. So many people have to work together, and you see that in action.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, please go on. Anything else you would like to share about the Gram Seva?
We have a lot to learn from we have a lot of to implement in our country now.
Hmm.
We have to encourage and motivate the youth to participate in the Seva. So a lot of we have to activate the Seva activities, you know, boost up Seva activities in the country where we live in. And as Swami said, the villagers, the well-being of the villagers is instrumental for the well-being of the country.
Yes.
So we have to go to the villages.
In fact,
so that's what the country, you know, economic and socially
absolutely
progress.
In fact, that reminds me how Bhagwan, way back in 1985, he had visited one of these villages, which is the Gram Seva village called Amagondapalyam. I don't know if you have gone there. And Bhagwan gave a discourse there, and Bhagwan went even to the extent of saying that this village and Kamavaripalli, Swami said, they are like my two eyes, Swami said. That only goes to show how much it mattered for him, for us to go to these rural areas, go to these underprivileged sections of society and feel one with them. And as you mentioned, only when we begin to do that, will we know that there is a joy much higher than what we normally consider as happiness and joy. The happiness of being of use to someone is something which only has to be experienced.
Just to add, you know, all the boys and the girls in the villages was jumping, you know, with joy and happiness, you know, just shouting aloud, positively and cheerfully, Sai Ram, Sai Ram. And this, you know, I can tell you, it's an unforgettable experience for all the boys who have come and do Grama Seva for the first time in Prashanti.
Wow. Really, I'm always someone who just like you, are never enough done with the joy that you get by doing something for someone, because I think that is something that is incomparable. That is something divine, whenever you can be of help to someone. So, Rohan, how was it for you in terms of this experience of going out to the villages and serving? You are a doctor. You probably would have looked at it from 2-3 perspectives.
I think the foremost feeling that I've had in this Gram Seva and all the Gram Sevas that I've participated in is the sense of humility that it gives you. That, as you've just mentioned, you know, Swami himself has visited these villages, they're his home. And yet, when we visit these villages, we're welcomed as Swami himself. As Brother just mentioned, you know, we have, you know, elderly Amas, 70, 80, 90-year-old, you know, touching our feet when we give them prasadam, because they see it as coming directly from Swami himself. When you see the rangoli that's on the roads that they clean and decorate in preparation for our coming, you know, you can see written next to them, you know, welcome Sai, welcome Swami. So we're welcomed as Bhagwan himself coming to deliver this prasadam. So I think that's the overwhelming feeling that I get. Kind of as Brother also mentioned, the joy in their faces, the children in particular, when we do kind of Naga Sankirtan, joining in the bhajans, running behind us, you know, when we're giving out Swami's photos, kind of as them, you know, they accept it as kind of a most treasured possession. So I think those are the two overriding emotions that I felt.
And Raj, what would you like to treasure from just this aspect of going every day to the villages, of seeing their conditions and being part of this exercise of seeing them smile?
For me, this year is my first Gram Seva.
So, oh, okay, first Gram Seva.
Yes.
So probably, tell me what was in your mind. So probably you would have had something in your mind, some picture you would have created of how is it going to be.
Yeah.
How was that picture to what it actually happened in reality?
So in my mind, I had a picture of us going out to remote villages, and just distributing food. So I thought it would be similar to Narayan Seva that we do back home in the UK. However, it's totally the opposite. As the brothers have both mentioned, the villagers welcome with us with so much love. It's like Swami giving us his love through them. And they welcome us in such a lovely way. You know, many of the villages and their homes are cleaned, you know, outside, top to bottom. You know, rangoli is put. And if you think about it, we are literally there for, say, half a minute, you know, to give prasadam to each house. So that's Swami coming to their house for like literally half a minute, and they really, that's precious time for them, because it's like Bhagawan coming to them personally to give them annam, laddu and asari and a dhoti. And you know, this is probably their highlight for the year. And one thing that was really touching to me is that most of the villages and all of the villages we went to, you know, the living conditions are not that great compared to what we have in the UK. I thought to myself, I'm so fortunate that I've got a roof over my head. I can, you know, walk up to the kitchen, open the tap, and I've got fresh, clean water to drink. Some of the villages didn't have running water supply, or they have to travel, you know, a couple of kilometers down the road to actually get clean water. And bear in mind that these roads are not, some of the roads are not fully tarmac, some of them are very treacherous and, you know, not smooth, so they may have to take their bullock cart. Some may not even have a mode of transport, they'll have to walk. So for me, this was really touching in the sense that it was a reality check for me personally, that Swami has put me in a place where I'm so fortunate that I have everything at my disposal. But then again, sometimes you always think to yourself, oh, I need this, I need that. And you're always asking for more, where when you sit back and think about it and you do something like Gram Seva, you think to yourself, I've got more than what I need to sustain in my life. So that was one aspect. And, you know, the other aspect was, as both brothers have mentioned, is the joy that people have when they see us. So, you know, when we're traveling to some of the villages, we may not be stopping at that specific village, but you have children as young as 10, younger than 10, you know, small children, toddlers. They'll see the convoy going past and, you know, they'll be shouting Sai Ram, and just the joy on their face is so nice to see. And that's Swami's love that's literally spreading. And we take it for granted sometimes, I think, that the work that Swami does, so, you know, subconsciously, that we are all doing. We're all his instruments and we're spreading his love like this. And that's definitely one thing that's touched me.
I think you don't mind going to the village any number of times just to see those kids in excitement,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Just to see those kids shouting with joy,
yeah,
shouting Sai Ram.
Yeah.
And that's a memory that you want to relive any number of times.
Yeah, and this is so loving. Like, I'm sure the brothers will agree, as you're going around to do Gram Seva around the village, there's always about a handful of children that follow you.
Yeah.
They just want to be in your presence, which is lovely to see. I mean, I have three nephews which are fairly young, and it just reminds me of them. And when you then look at them and say, I compare them both, you know, some of these children don't even have shoes on, and just basic amenities that they don't have. But then again, they still have the same smile as my nephews back home, which is lovely to see.
That's another facet, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, how can, with so little also, you can be so contented?
Yeah.
You can still smile with so little.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have so much, but still we find it difficult to smile.
It's true, yeah.
Brother, just to add, you know, there was one family in a village, wealthy family, can afford, you know, everything. But he was waiting for us to give him the prasad. He said, Swami has sent the prasad and he must take the prasad.
This was important for him.
This is important, very important for him.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that, you know, we were distributing to the needy and needy people and the,
yes,
poor people of the village.
Wow. And you mentioned, Raj, about the reality check. I think about for us to not only be sensitive to the other person, but also see that when we need something in life, perhaps we'll have to think whether do I want it or do I need it? Can I do without it? Only when I cannot do without it, perhaps I really need it.
It's funny you mentioned that, because this morning in Papadza, in one of his one of our sessions, Papadza mentioned sealing our desires.
Yes.
He said to us all boys that next time you guys should think, when you want something, first, do I need it?
Okay.
Secondly, can I afford it? And third, can I live without it? And I thought to myself, and I thought to myself, in the past 6 months, there's probably a handful of occasions where I could have answered that question and, not done something. It was definitely an eye-opener for me in terms of sealing on desires and actually then focusing not on the worldly matter, but also just focusing on Swami.
Yes.
So Gram Seva is also great in that sense as well, because it focuses your mind on Baba.
In fact, when you mention sealing on desires, what comes to my mind is a very powerful discourse that Bhagavan gave on service. And Swami said that when I want you to do service, I want you to first practice sealing on desires and then serve. Because he said, just because you have money, there is no point just spending some money and doing service. I don't want that kind of a money. I don't want you to borrow money from a government. I don't want you to borrow money from a wealthy person and do service. That is not what is the intention of doing service. Swami said you should do service only after you have saved some money by controlling your desires. If you have saved any money, only with that much money you can do service. And when you speak about this, you know, what comes to me is sometimes it might, there could be a feeling that, you know, we are taking all the fun out of life. I mean, all the life, all the so-called fun out of life comes out of fulfilling all these desires, and we are curtailing so many of our desires. I mean, are we going to take out all that that makes supposed to make our life colorful? What do you think?
No, not necessarily. So I'm looking back on the 10 days I've spent so far here. We've been lucky enough that we've got a great accommodation. Food is served to us. We have Swami's prasadam. We've been spoilt to the tea personally. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Sometimes I believe that Swami always provides more than what we need.
Yes.
And if we then cut back on a small way,
yes,
if ultimately our goal is to try and become one with,
yes,
with Baba, and so making that small sacrifice is actually to our advantage, not our disadvantage.
Yes. And as you mentioned, Swami will ensure that your life is filled with happiness. Well, he will do that.
Yeah. Yes.
Just to add here, brother, the principle, the program of sealing on desires, the ninth point code of conduct as proclaimed by Swami to each and every devotee.
Yes.
And I can tell you I'm long, long way there to achieve what, in terms of don't waste food, don't waste money, and time and energy. This Grama Seva, one of the lessons that they have brought to me personally, and I'm sure for all the brothers here, is in terms of sealing our desires, which today, Professor, at length explained to us the importance of it. And one of the lessons, we have to do in our country is to embrace this program of Swami on the sealing desires in depth and in totality, especially in food and money, which we can save,
yes,
to come in next year.
Today is
to help the poor,
yes,
and needy villages.
Today is October 2nd, which is the birthday of Mahatma Gandhiji. And I cannot help but remember what Mahatma Gandhiji said about this. He said that the world has enough, the earth has enough to take care of everyone's need, not everyone's greed. if we want the whole world to live a lifestyle that someone in the Western world lives, then perhaps even 15 earths and its resources will not be enough. But if you want to lead a lifestyle which is just good enough, then probably the entire earth can live. God has given enough resources for all of us, enough to make us all comfortable. But if you only want to lead a very, very luxurious life, then it only means that a maximum will have to lead a very, very pitiable condition. And the Gram Seva is an eye-opener. The Gram Seva is not just, as you all very rightly said, not just an occasion for us to give someone a food or a laddu. It's not as if they are not having food. It is just, I always feel, just Bhagwan said, that you should never ever think that when you serve someone, you are actually doing something for someone. It is more what that service does to you. Yeah. And as I listen to you, and you know, the reflection that comes is, I think perhaps the villagers possibly have got one cloth and, you know, a dhoti and a laddu and sari, but the lessons that they have taught you are perhaps much, much profound, much life-changing than what difference that you have brought in their lives. And I think that is one of the biggest, perhaps, blessings that we should be really grateful to Bhagwan for. So tell me, Jai, Rohan and Rajin, of course, this aspect of so many lessons of sealing on desire, sensitivity that we learn from Gram Seva, but are there any other facets of Bhagwan's life and teachings that really captivate you, that really have captured your imagination? Yeah, Rohan.
I think in my own profession as a doctor, the one thing of Swami's teachings, also taught by Jesus, was do unto others as you would have done to yourself, and love thy neighbour as thyself. It's one of those things that I try and carry with me at work when I'm seeing patients. And you know, each patient has so many jobs that require doing, and you know, sometimes the mind kind of thinks, is this something that I can delay? Is this something I can hand over to someone else? But then, you know, I go back and think, if that was me lying in that bed, completely helpless, and I have this kind of figure of power standing over me, you know, how would I like to be treated by that person? You know, a lot of the patients that we have come in on my ward, you know, very elderly patients, very frail, who, you know, in some cases aren't able to do anything for themselves at all. They require complete care. And so, you know, that's, I think, one of the biggest things that I've taken, you know, in terms of my professional life. And again, that's something that Gram Seva has contributed towards, you know, looking at, you know, the conditions of these villagers, how happy they are despite their material poverty. And kind of there's me sitting there at work, you know, thinking, oh, I've got so much to do, you know, life's so difficult, you know, I need some help. And then my mind goes back to those, you know, few days that I've spent, few hours out in these villages, and thinking about how happy those children are despite, you know, what little they have materially, the contentment, as you mentioned, and I think that's what I take back.
Wow, I cried for a pair of shoes until I saw a man with a single leg.
Yes.
And Rohan, as you mentioned about being more empathetic to your patients, doing something extra whenever there is a need. In fact, I'm reminded of a conversation that I had with a former student of Bhagwan's University who is also a doctor serving in UK. And when I asked him the same question, what difference has Bhagwan made in your professional life? He told me the same thing. He said that if it is already 5:30, then there is no obligation for him to actually stay back in the hospital and look after the patients. if they are waiting. You know, he can legally and he can perhaps officially, rightfully tell them to go back.
That's right.
But he says, I've just not been able to do that. He would always stay back because he would always think about the other person. And it's the same that is happening to you. So it's really amazing how Swami brings this little changes in our pattern of thinking, which will add so much joy to our lives. So Raj, how has it been for you taking Swami's message into your professional sphere?
I think the big teaching that brought me into Swami's fold and I've taken with me through my youth and as I've matured is help ever hurt never. And I started to get more involved and more close to Swami as I started to take on more service activities through my local center, Bhajan Center. And it was through the service activities that then I started to make the link with Swami, and I actually understood the importance of service and service to the wider community, whether that be locally or here in Prashanti. Because ultimately, it's a way of, you know, spreading Swami's message and spreading Swami's love. And I think this is important because sometimes we, in our daily routine, we get so caught up with our 9-to-5, you know, Monday to Friday routine that sometimes we need to take some time out just to do some service, to actually put ourselves into perspective and also to understand that though sometimes we may think that we are worse off, we are actually better off. And Gram Seva is actually one of those examples. In terms of like in the workplace at work, I find it important that sometimes in work situations you get put under pressure, or you know you can get into situations where you know at the heat of the moment you can say the wrong thing at the wrong time,
yes.
Or you know you may have a certain interaction with a certain colleague that may sort of be pushing your buttons, but then this is where Swami's teachings come into effect, where you always have to remember that that person sitting opposite to you or working within your team is Swami's within them. So it's important that we then also treat them with respect as well. So, you know, respect and dignity as well.
Yes.
I think that's important. And Swami always says, he's always made it clear that, you know, we shouldn't distinguish between caste, creed, colour. So, you know, even though at the center, when we're with our fellow Sai family, we are gelled together. But we should also try and do that in our workplace, even though it may be difficult. So I try and take Swami's teachings with me when I'm at work as well.
Wow, that's fantastic. I remember talking to the secretary of the Sri Lankan Satyasai organization. His name is Manoharan. And I saw him that he was very busy with Swami's work, and I asked him, you know, how does he make time for his professional work? Because I saw him so much busy with Swami's work, and I asked him, has it ever hampered your deep engagement with the Sai organization, with the Sai youth? Has it hampered your professional career? You know what he told me? He said, whatever I am in my professional life, I owe it to the training that I receive in the Satyasai organization and working with the youth here. I was reminded of this because you mentioned that, you know, when you work with different people in the Satyasai organization, you know, you work with all kinds of people, all color, all caste, all creed, and you learn the art of living with people. You learn the art of the true man management. And he said, it is all this training that I received working in the Satyasai organization and managing projects, managing programs, that has really greatly helped me in my professional career. And he's actually rose up to a very good position in a very short number of years. And so that's what came to me when you said that, you know, in your professional life also you are able to see how you are able to have no distinction and take situations in a calm manner. How has it been for you, Rajendranath? And you are also an office bearer of Satyasai organization. You are a regional chairman of the Satyasai organization.
For me, the advent of this avatar itself is a great lesson for us. The last avatar which came was Lord Krishna, the Purna avatar. After 5 or 6 thousand years, we have now another Purna avatar, Bhagavan Sisatya Sai Baba, who came for us. And you know, they say that, you know, when the disciple is ready, it is then that the guru appears to him. But this time, this avatar has chosen one. Each has chosen everyone, yourself, these brothers, to come in this way, in Prashanti, to come, you know, to be born when he's here, in this period of when he's on earth. So we are most fortunate, and we cannot have words to express our gratitude to this avatar which Bhagavan Sisatya Sai Baba. For me, his life, like he said, his life is his message. I try, you know, to put in practice the nine point codes of conduct. But as I mentioned, there are some of the points codes of conduct which have a long way to go, like, you know, to speak softly and lovingly to everyone, like also sitting on desires and what I also try to put in practice is Sharanagati, to surrender, you know, everything to Swami. This one trying to put this into practice.
Yes, it's a journey for everyone. You can never ever say that I am living all Swami's teachings in life, in everything that I do. But I think it's a journey, and everybody is on that path, and we are all here to support each other for that. I'm really very moved with what you said. You know, you mentioned that when the Lord, we are so blessed to be here. When the Lord is here with us on earth, I'm very touched by what you mentioned as a presence and not a past. And I think that conviction is so important for us. That conviction will take us to great heights of self-confidence. Rohan, you are someone who has come to Prashanti so many times before, and you have had the chance to perhaps interact with Bhagwan, have had chance to perhaps have interviews when Bhagwan used to give a lot of his personal time, especially to this group which has come with Popat sir. So how is it for you now when you think about those days and the current different scenario?
You know, I can't say that there haven't been changes. Of course there have. I think, you know, there are elements that have changed, and yet there are elements that have stayed the same. I think one of the things that I do miss personally is that kind of sense of spontaneity of when you go and sit in darshan, when is Swami going to come, how long is he going to stay. You know, you're sat there waiting for that music to start, and then you turn towards Yajur Mandir to try and catch that first glimpse of the orange robe. And, you know, that's something that I definitely miss. Now everything is kind of done to a timetable, so the same kind of sense of uncertainty. And, you know, it's when Swami always says, love my uncertainty.
So he loved that uncertainty.
He loved that uncertainty.
He loved that magic and the mystery in that uncertainty.
But at the same time, I think, In another sense, it hasn't changed so much in that Swami does still show his presence. When I was fortunate to come last year, and I spent some time at the super speciality hospital here in Puttaparthi, one afternoon after I'd finished there, I came for afternoon darshan. And as the curtain around Mahasamadhi opened, there was, you know, vibhuti sprinkled all over Swami's seat.
Oh, okay.
And I'd spoken to one of the people who worked at the hospital, who's been here for, I think, over 40 years as a student and now working at the hospital, and he said he'd never seen that before. So, you know, Swami certainly still shows that he's here, you know, despite the fact that we don't kind of still, you know, get to see his form physically. He still shows his presence. I think, as Brother Jay also mentioned, when Sir speaks in the morning and then reads thought for the day,
yes,
you know, how regularly they coincide. To give one example from this morning, being Durgashtami, Sir was explaining about the significance of Ayudh Puja,
yes,
where, you know, originating from when the Pandavas, you know, took out their weapons after so many years of being in isolation and in preparation for the battle that was to come, and they worshipped those weapons. And Puppet Sir was explaining kind of how is that relevant today, you know, in that we're not worshipping physical weapons and we're not going out to kill anyone. And he explained that the weapons today that we worship are the weapons of love, the weapons of faith, the weapon of conviction, and the weapon of self-control. Shortly after that, he opened the Thought for the Day book, and the first line was that a wise man should have self-control.
Wow.
So, as I said, in some ways things have changed, and yet in many ways they've stayed the same.
Amazing. And again and again, Swami makes you feel that if you think I'm there, I'm there. And Jay, is it the first time you are here in Prashanti, or the Gramsaya was the first experience?
Gramsaya was my first experience. I actually came to Prashanti for the first time in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was again with the Popitsa.
Mm-hmm.
It was as part of the 2007 World Youth Conference. And my main memory of that was we were lucky enough to go into the mandir for bhajans. I think we were in there for about 20 minutes to half an hour, and we were all crammed in. I think there was a big group of us that came. Prabhupada Sir kindly organized the charter flight, so there was a big contingent from the UK, so we all crammed in to the mandir, and we felt so blessed to actually be in the presence of Swami for that half an hour, 20 minutes while bhajans were going on. And that was my first sort of close interaction with Swami. And
first time you were seeing him physically?
Yes, yeah.
So how was that experience of seeing him for the first time physically?
Because of the close proximity, well, I was sitting to the back of the mandir, but to me the vibrations in that room were something that I've never felt before. You could actually feel that you were in the presence of the divine, and, you know, Swami, you just stare into Swami's eyes, and, you know, for a minute you don't know where you're sitting. That was one of the key sort of moments for me. I mean, at that time, I think I was 15 or 16 years old. So I was aware of Swami, but I wasn't very close to him. So I didn't, I didn't follow his teachings to the T, you know, in my daily routine. And I just knew of Swami. I used to attend bhajans every now and then, and I thought, let me go to Prashanti for the first time. And it's from that trip that I then started to get more and more involved in Swami's work and organization, and started to, you know, get involved in the Sai family more. So that was my first sort of stepping stone. So that trip for me was quite special, yeah.
And Rajendranath, when was that moment in your life when you felt that, yes, he is my God, I have to follow him?
Swami came into my life, you know, since I was childhood, but the most memorable experience that I got with Swami is when, you know, when I came to India. I worked for 3 years in India for one of the bank which previously that I worked for. And, you know, my son, I admitted my son in he was 3 years old, pre-KG here. So it was, Friday was the first day of school. they taught him AB, AB, first two letters. So we were flying to Whitehill on Saturday. So we came to Saturday, my wife and my son. So what we wrote on a piece of paper, only B, B-A-B-A, Baba. Then, you know, after 2 days we got the first row. We just put it in a letter. Then, on the second day we get the first row. Then Swami came. Then the Sevadil was not allowing us to take my son in front of, you know, got the first row, but I had to put my son at the back. So Swami came. Swami came and looked and requested me the letter. Where the letter? You know, my son, I don't know where he put the letter.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking for that. So when I just, then after some time, after 2 or 3 minutes, you know, Swami waited till mm-hmm. I got the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went. So when I handed over the letter, wow. with a beautiful smile, when I handed it, then he went.
Wow.
It was the most memorable experience of Swami. I miss his physical body, physical Swami. I miss it, but why I miss it, you know, we usually come to Puttaparthi with, you know, the sadhana that we do when Swami is here is not the same. You know, I'm not talking of the this trip. This trip is life changing for me. But when Swami is not here, we used to come. It is not the same sadhana that we used to have previously when Swami was here. So we miss this part as well. But Swami is present everywhere. We feel it. We feel now it is everywhere. It is in our work, at home, in our centers, everywhere.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, I really want to continue this discussion, but the clock is ticking, and perhaps we will come to the closing part of this session. But before that, what I would want each of you to articulate is, what are those one or two indelible life lessons that you want to take as you leave Prashanthi Nilayam from this trip? What is it that you want to really make it a part of your life, part of the way you look at life, the way you approach life from what you have experienced here?
Brother, as you said, it is an indelible, this Ramasal is an indelible mark on my life. I will not forget this moment that I have had for the last, say 10 days we are here. What I would do maybe is, you know, as you said, as I'm a office bearer of the National Council of the Satya Sai Organization of Mauritius, there we have to motivate all our youth, motivate all the young adults, you know, to participate in seva, and also to boost up our seva activities in villages in our country.
You should allow more people to taste the joy of service.
Yes, yes.
Then it'll automatically boom.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And you, Jay?
Personally, I think it's two things. Firstly, through our satsangs with Puppet Sir, one of the things I've picked up is he's mentioned quite a bit about surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And surrendering to Swami, and even at the most difficult point in your life where you're faced with such a challenge where you think, why? Surrender to Swami, because ultimately He knows His divine plan that He has for each of us.
Yes.
Individually. So we can't sit there and contemplate thinking, why?
Yes.
Why me, sort of thing.
Yes.
And I've been in situations like where you feel so bogged down at the end of the day after work, or, you know, when you get put in certain situations where you feel Swami, why? But then from conversations and satsangs we've had with Puppet Sir, he said, you know, surrender you to Swami, and because ultimately nothing happens without Swami's will, and there's always a reason why certain things happen, and that's something that I definitely will take away with me, because once you surrender, it's you feel like there's a weight off your shoulder.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that, you know, eventually Swami then guides you down the right path, or, you know, gives you the guidance to get over your hurdles, and which is a learning curve for us all individually. So surrender is definitely one thing I'll take away with me. And the second thing is the memories of going to the villages over the past week or so. And just, I think the what's going to be etched in my mind is the smiles of the children, not just the children, but there's very elderly people there, you know, people that are in their late 70s, 80s that really are, you know, struggling, but they get on with it, and it's that drive and passion for Swami that Swami gives them, that energy, and you know, they live in really challenging circumstances, but they still have so much joy and happiness. So those are the couple of things that I would definitely take away with me from Gram Seva this year.
Wonderful. You mentioned about surrender, and I'm reminded of a quote which says, God always loves to upset our plans so that he can execute his plans. And truly, I think if we can surrender every moment, if we cannot question every moment, if we can accept every moment, and we need not expect everything that to happen the way we want it, and accept the way it has happened, perhaps then life will actually become a celebration. You never have a day of sorrow in life, because you never question him.
Yes.
And once you don't question him, this is something which I have also experienced. So once you start accepting things, then even seemingly unpleasant situations, seemingly setbacks in life, seemingly stones that are thrown at you, they do become stepping stones. They do open new doors. If there's a door, if you find a door that is closed, you'll find that another two doors will open for you. But you should have that attitude of acceptance. And I think that is the biggest lesson that we can take, which will really make our lives very, very happy.
Yes, and I think even though surrender is easy to say it, but when it actually comes into practice,
yes.
Another thing Puppet Sir has mentioned that sticks to me in my mind is, we are attached so much to the physical body, and sometimes we don't focus the mind on the ultimate goal of becoming one with God. And sometimes that surrender kind of helps you to then align yourself back to,
yes,
back on the right path, because sometimes we find ourselves so worried about situations we get,
yes,
put in,
yes,
that we tend to forget about being with Swami.
That's not important, as important as the main goal of life.
Yes, yeah. And
yes.
Personally, I can recall many situations where, you know, I'll be sitting in the mandir at home doing mala, and I'll be reciting Om Namah Shivaya, but really in my head I'm thinking about 20 different things.
Yes.
So, you know, that's some of the things I'll take. Yeah.
Wonderful. And you, Rohan?
I think the thing that I want to take back from the trip is the injection of spirituality into kind of every moment of the day. As Brother Jay explained at the beginning, you know, how from the moment we wake up and meet at 5 in the morning to when we go to sleep at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, you know, the focus is always on Swami. You know, when we're together in the mandir, when we're in the villages, when we're eating. And I've always found that actually in Prashanti, to be able to do that is actually relatively easy, because the atmosphere is conducive towards that. Whereas when we go back home, you know, we go back to so many distractions, to a much more secular society, a worldly society orientated towards material things. So that's the one thing, or the main thing at least, that I would like to try and hold on to when I go back home, is to try and kind of keep that focus and to try and keep my mind on Swami as much as I possibly can, rather than being distracted by all the things when I go back.
Wow, I think that is fantastic. To spiritualize every moment exactly. of the day.
Yes.
And true, I think we would be doing great service to Prashant Nilayam if we can do that, because Bhagavan always mentioned that our trip to Prashant Nilayam would become complete only when we carry Prashant Nilayam in our hearts, and wherever we go, we are able to in some ways create the Prashanti, at least within ourselves, within our own family. And we can do that only if we learn to spiritualize every moment. And that will happen if, as Bhagavan used to always say, that, you know, you cannot compartmentalize spirituality. You cannot be spiritual only when you sit in the puja room and not be spiritual when you're out in your profession or out in the market. Everything is God's work. And I think having that perspective, I think that's a huge takeaway. And that again is something which will completely change the way we look at life and the happiness that this whole journey will give us. So wonderful. Thank you very much, brothers. Before I end, did any of you think that you'll be actually speaking on Radio Sai before you came for this Gram Seva and this trip and this sadhana?
No, definitely.
Okay. So this is again Bhagavan's uncertainty.
Yes.
But I think, I hope it was a memorable experience for you. And definitely it was enriching for me, and I am sure the listeners would have loved it. And I just hope that we get to meet more often, and these beautiful insights Sai continues to give us, SAI. You know, as you engage in service, as you engage in His adoration, this illumination continues to happen. We need to carry that Sai within us. See always inside is another definition of Sai. So that is a way to spiritualize our lives, and that is a way to find that fulfillment in our lives. Thank you so much. I know it's been a very hectic day for you, and but still you took the time out and you're here with us, and it's really, I'm sure it must have been a very, very fulfilling experience for all the listeners also, because for them also to know that someone comes, a group of youth come all the way from United Kingdom every year just to mingle with the boys and get that experience. Not everyone has the chance to be a Sai student, but you have had the chance to be with them for a good number of days and be a part of very important activity and take that experience. I think that is a very, very immense blessing. And whatever you have shared is something people who have not been able to part of it can gather, and they can take to their lives. So I'm really grateful to Bhagavan for having made this possible. Thank you so much, each one of you, for being a part of Outside Inside, Deep Inside.
Sai.
Thank you.
Sai.
So dear listeners, with that, it's time to draw the curtains on Thursday Live. Tomorrow is the big day of Vijayadashmi. And as always, you can watch the programs live on our website, radiosai.org. The audio is always there for you to listen. The live stream continues. If you have any queries or comments, or if you would like to suggest to us something about our programs, how we can improve, what would you like to say? As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studio is 9:37. And finally, before I say goodbye, let us always remember, as the brother mentioned, that we are here to spiritualize our lives. We are not earthly beings having a divine experience. We are divine beings who sometimes have earthly experiences, and we need to always remember that we are divine. And that is what is conveyed every time we breathe. When we say, Bhagavan used to always say that when you breathe, it is so hum, which means I am that. So let's remember that, and let us take this opportunity of celebrating this festival where we celebrate our journey from Tamasoma to Dirghamaya, from ignorance to enlightenment, and that enlightenment is to see Sai in all, to feel Sai in all, to love that Sai in all. Thank you so much, and a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam.
Side.